Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I'm CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent Major Garrett, and you're invited to The Takeout, no reservations required. Every weeknight, our podcast serves up a balanced menu of politics, policy, and pop culture. The day's happenings with curiosity, informality, and humor. Serious discussion, but we don't take ourselves too seriously. Follow and listen to The Takeout with me, Major Garrett, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I have Payne and Pendergast with you. Into the 7 o'clock hour we go. Hey, programming note, about 48 hours and change from now, 7:15 a.m. on Thursday, Texans Executive Vice President and GM Nick Caserio will join us on the show. A little earlier than his usual hit. Usually he goes 7:30. 7:15, so make a note. So funny.
This video that somebody posted.
Oh, that is funny.
Some guy with a Twitter handle claims he's an ESPN. It says it's Brock Corral, ESPN, but he's not ESPN. But it's a video said, hey, this is why the Texans got rid of Laremy Tunsil. And then there's a video of a guy who looks like a 400-pound version of Laremy Tunsil.
He looks like if you ask ChatGPT to add 110 pounds to Tunsil, that's what he would look like.
He's got the two earrings, and he's devouring these wings in a car, like doing a food review of it. And he's so fat and sloppy. But it looks so much like Tunsil.
And it is an obscene amount of fried food and biscuits that he's got in front of him. It's really funny. It is funny. That's worth
it
laughing.
It looks so much like Tunsil.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Because he's got like no eyebrows and no, you know, bald head and everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really funny.
That's messed up. I do not endorse that type of humor.
No, we don't. No, not at all.
That's why I have to repost it as an illustration of what I don't endorse.
I do not approve of this thing that I just reposted. All right, so Seth, let's get to this. 7 reasons you love the Nick Chubb signing. Nick Chubb, 1 year, $2.5 million. Deal can go up to $5 million. Nick Chubb, very accomplished. Undeniably, over the last 6 or 7 years, one of the best running backs in all of football, especially before the injuries. Like, obviously, the injuries the last 2 years have robbed him of these 2 years, and we'll see, you know, exactly how it plays out for the Texans with the injuries. But you have a lot of reasons that you really, really like this signing. So let's go.
An odd number of reasons, as discussed, because
7 is
ideally
an odd
3,
number.
But there's so many reasons I like this that I have to go with 7.
Best
to do it in odd numbers.
Yep.
1, sheer pettiness. Sheer pettiness.
Yes.
That, hey,
yes.
I think everybody I've heard from the Browns understands that Nick Chubb is an uphill battle for him to get back to where he once was. They understand where he is in this career, and yet they love him so much that it's devastating to them that the Browns, who are stuck in this purgatory where they're not quite rebuilding, but they're not quite going for it.
Right.
They're upset that Nick Chubb is leaving Cleveland. You found a Cleveland fan who lays out perfectly just how much the Texans have destroyed the Browns franchise.
I will credit a listener of ours, Pedro, who sent this to me on Instagram. He messaged me this reel on Instagram that's done by a Cleveland content generator by the name of Max Loeb, who lays out exactly how the Texans have ruined the Browns franchise over the last 3 years.
How is this happening again? I can't believe this. The Houston Texans have physically and emotionally dismantled the Cleveland Browns more than any other team in the past decade. Nick Chubb, now a Houston Texan. Not here to talk about if that was a good or a bad move for the Browns to move on from Nick Chubb. The reality is the fan favorite in Cleveland, gone to Houston. Gone to Houston 2 years after they beat you by 31 points in the NFL playoffs. They destroy you. And all of that is after this trade. Will Anderson, Tank Dell, Kamari Lassiter, Caden Bullock, for Deshaun Watson, and a pick that got Jerry Jeudy, so maybe there's some positive. No, I'm literally asking you, has there ever been an NFL team that's taken a fan favorite star player, absolutely dismantled them in the playoffs, and then pulled off the heist of a century in a franchise altering trade for both sides? No. The answer is no. Now, there's really only so much you can do. You almost have to tip your cap to Nick Caserio and the Houston Texans. But the Houston Texans have physically and emotionally ruined the Browns fan base for the past 5-6 years. And don't forget, they made another trade in this year's draft, too.
Yeah, they did. They made another trade. I forget what it was.
Yeah, so we'll see. There's still more. We can put a cherry on top of that.
Yeah, man.
I think my favorite, despite obviously Deshaun Watson being the big coup in all of this, I mean, that's the body slam.
Oh, yeah.
Chokehold. Yep. Like, you're done.
Yep.
Is popping the Joe Flacco bubble in the playoffs.
Underrated,
and then the Browns still yet again going back to the Joe. Like they re-signed the deflated bubble.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, all right, well, I could still use it to I could use this deflated balloon to tie something up, I suppose.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yep. That's underrated. You're right. Because they were all in on Joe Flacco.
Yes. Number two reason I love this signing of Nick Chubb.
Mm-hmm.
And now this is, I wrote this before I knew what the contract details were. I said the contract itself, as Diana Russini had pointed out, she says that Chubb was willing to play for the Texans for less than what other teams offered. So, and it ends up being less than what I had deemed acceptable. Ends up being $2.5 million worth up to $5 million with incentives. That is the sweet spot of, hey, we're paying guys that almost definitely aren't going to make the team as linemen and what have you more money than that.
Yep.
That's as close as it gets to just pocket cash in the NFL. The upside being that, man, the guy, if he can get back to 75% of what he used to be, that is a hell of a backup running back you have.
Yes.
And what I would add on to that, too, it's not one of the main points, but I played against this guy when he was an aging short yardage specialist, Marcus Allen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Marcus Allen played forever as a short yardage specialist after he wasn't a peak running back. You know, and I could see an avenue where maybe Nick Chubb at some point doesn't have that same breakaway speed or explosiveness, but is a big, strong, smart dude that can get 2 yards for you on the goal line.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I just, for some perspective on the contract, the base contract, 1 year, $2.5 million, that's $500,000 more than Dario Gumbawale is making. It's $500,000 less than Trent Brown's getting, you know, like the base. Now, it can, as Seth points out, it can go up to $5 million. I'd be very curious what the incentives are. At some point, Aaron Wilson will tweet out every detail, chapter and verse of the contract. But
that would be the only part where it might cushion it a little bit, but the fact that it's still incentive-based is if the incentives are simply being on the active roster or playtime or what have you, that's where I guess, ideally the incentives would be you rush for 1,700 yards.
Yeah.
But like it's still, even if it was one year, $5 million guaranteed, I still would have been okay with that contract.
Sure.
$5 million was kind of my limit. So, this is a very good contract for the reality of the situation.
For sure. I would guess that they probably skew towards just being active on game day. For the reason you brought up yesterday, you brought up as an enticement to Nick Chubb, possibly being that he doesn't have to be the bell cow guy here. You've got Joe Mixon already. It's almost unfair that if you're coming in with that sort of role and that sort of mentality to say, oh, yeah, that's cool that you're cool being here and getting 10 carries a game. You have to rush for 1,250 yards to get this $1 million bonus. You know,
right.
So I think his role, if I had to guess, you know, we're kind of parsing nuts here at this point. But it's bottom line. You're absolutely right. We're parsing nuts with Chubb. The bottom line is this is a very, very good deal for the Texans.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Very good deal.
Yep.
Third reason I love
number
this
three.
Is,
I love
as,
this
alluded,
one. Yeah,
as
I love-
alluded to previously, according to Diana Russini, Chubb chose the Texans despite being offered more money elsewhere.
Yes,
which
yes.
is a stamp of authenticity from Nick Chubb on the Texans organization, even after they were miserable at run blocking last year. But he enters a situation where he's got a young quarterback that I'm sure he thinks that he likes a lot. He's watched him in person dismantle the Browns. And I think Joe Mixon is a selling point there.
Yeah.
I think Nick Chubb doesn't need to be the bell cow right now as he's still trying to come back from this devastating knee injury. And being alongside Joe Mixon, and I would add into that, I think Joe Mixon is probably happy about this. Joe Mixon knows that the key to having a long and fruitful career as a running back in the NFL is to be have some version of running back by committee, and they didn't really have that.
They had nobody they trusted other than Mixon last year to carry the football. They just didn't. That's borne out in the box scores of the games that you go look at, especially in the postseason.
The other part about this situation being attractive to Chubb, I'm sure, is that the Texans have shown that they've signed guys to one-year deals, Dalton Schultz, Malik Collins, Mario Edwards, et cetera, that the Texans then extend. That you don't have to, that they're willing to, that prove it contract doesn't have to be a, hey, prove it in Houston, then go elsewhere. No, we'll pay you if we like what we see.
That'll be an interesting one. You're absolutely right about the guys you just listed. This will be an interesting where the rubber meets the road situation, given that he's going to be nearly a 30-year-old running back when that decision will have to have been made.
They redid Joe Mixon's contract, you know, where
the
you
day
might
they
raise
traded
an eyebrow
for him. The day,
right. Yeah. And you might raise an eyebrow and say, that's money you're giving to an aging running back. I think as it is with Nick, he's really cool with spending a lot of money in short-term doses.
Yeah.
And that's, I would guess it's going to end up, if it works out to the absolute best, a lot of guaranteed money over a short period of time.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I'm CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent Major Garrett, and you're invited to The Takeout, no reservations required. Every weeknight, our podcast serves up a balanced menu of politics, policy, and pop culture. The day's happenings with curiosity, informality, and humor. Serious discussion, but we don't take ourselves too seriously. Follow and listen to The Takeout with me, Major Garrett, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
My wormhole today, before we get to reason number four, we're in the middle of Seth's seven reasons he loves the Nick Chubb signing. My wormhole today might be to go back and look at the day the Deshaun Watson trade was made and what were people saying about the Texans and what were people saying about the Browns. Mm-hmm. Because the Deshaun Watson was viewed as the finishing touches on a Super Bowl caliber roster that day. That's undeniable. And in a culture that people feel like they'd gotten out of the losing in Cleveland, you know, they were on their way to big things. The Texans hadn't even drafted Derek Stingley Jr. yet when the Deshaun Watson trade got made. They were less than a month in to the Lovie Smith era at that point, maybe. I mean, it was like mid-March. I think they hired Lovie in February that year. So it was still, I mean, you were 2 months removed from the David Culley era. To go back and find articles back then, opinions of people, what they thought about each of those franchises, and that now it's clearly been flipped on its head. You know, like the Browns are viewed back how they were viewed before, well before, you know, back in the, you know, the Hugh Jackson era. And the Texans, to your point, Seth, are viewed as a place where the Browns, one of the Browns' faces of their franchise for the last two decades, decided to come here and play for $2.5 million as a backup. You know, like, it's just, I want to go back and just see what the receipts look like from 3 years ago. 3 years ago, that's when that was happening, man.
Number four reason I love this Nick Chubb signing.
Yeah.
He's the right kind of guy. Swarm tendencies abound with this one, Sean.
RKOG, yes.
The swarm is strong in this one.
Yes.
If I did that little blood test that they do on the young potential Jedis, I feel like it would come back with whatever those little micro bodies were or whatever. Yeah.
They're called midichlorians, Seth. Yeah.
Okay, yes. Yeah. He's got a lot of swarmichlorians in him.
Swarmichlorians, yeah.
So he's swimming in a pool that's rife with swarmichlorine.
Yes.
So swarmichlorine. I asked ChatGPT to go through 57 articles for me, all of which I had read completely. But just to summarize, let's see. These are his character traits: hardworking and determined, team oriented, polite and humble. That's not even a swarm character characteristic, but that's an. I like that. I just like it. Resilient, courageous.
Yes, the C word.
As we careen towards World War III, we desperately need courage, quiet leadership. Ding. That's the Andre Johnson factor. Then on and on and on. I think the biggest thing is really, everybody from Cleveland just gushes about his football character and around the league going back to his college days. So that part is just a no-brainer.
I like that a lot. This was, you know, when guys come on new teams, they do videos where the social media team hands them a phone and they go for, you know, 15 seconds about how excited they are to be there and they get all animated and things like that. To your point, this was Nick Chubb's intro video.
What's up, H-Town? Nick Chubb here. Super excited to be here. Let's get to work.
That's it, man.
That's it.
Super excited.
Quiet and unassuming. Yeah.
Get to work. And then flashy, you didn't see it because it's audio, but he flashed his H's up. So he knows, and he had a jersey on too. So he was probably,
doing a photo shoot. Yeah.
They were doing the media stuff yesterday in the building there where they shoot the stuff for the Jumbotron and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
So that must have been what they were doing. Yeah. That's why he had the jersey on.
Fifth reason I love this signing, and this is one, I don't think you sign Chubb for this specifically, but I think it ends up being a great situation, is Chubb, twice in his career, he had a devastating injury in college where he had to have multiple ligaments repaired. So, like, he's come back from that once before, but then he has another devastating multi-surgery injury, and it's been a two-year process coming back from that. It's a good resource for Tank Dell. Tank Dell's been in Tank Dell will be in the same building with Chubb. There's probably, there's times where you get down because the progress isn't necessarily where you want to be. You get frustrated. I like that he can be there, not just for that, but just for the actual nuts and bolts of a rehab, how to go about it, how to be careful with this or aggressive with that. I think that's a good kind of ancillary benefit to this.
Yeah, time. Almost not advisory, but just the sounding board for Tank if he's going through certain things when it comes to the injury. Do you think that's part of the extra $2.5 million that he can get up to five with? Is if he charges Tank by the hour?
They should.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Submits an invoice
to Nick.
If
Casario?
Tank Dell, there should be a little extra bonus in there. If Tank Dell plays this year, you get an extra $1 million.
Yeah, that should be part of it. Yeah, as Tank's therapist, that's what he should get, 100%. All right, so that's number five. Number six.
Number six reason I love this signing of Nick Chubb, the added competition in the running back room and giving you options in the running back room. I think immediately, as soon as this became a rumor, you and I were asked most often about Damian Pierce. What does this mean for Damian Pierce? I don't think it really necessarily affects Damian Pierce directly other than with the numbers game, because they're two different scenarios. With the Texans, it's a very, very low risk signing. And with Nick Chubb, they're going to see exactly how he looks physically during training camp. And there's a chance that maybe he's on the PUP to start the season because he's coming off that broken foot too. So they know the upside of Nick Chubb, but they can't depend on it right now. Damian Pierce is more of a young guy that if we like how he looks in training camp, there's a very good chance that they like Damian Pierce in week one better as the number two running back than they like Nick Chubb.
Yeah.
So they're kind of separating him by two different sets of standards. I think that the numbers game is real, but there is extra competition now, but Damian Pierce is more in competition with Ogunbowale, Woody Marks, and all the other young running backs.
I agree. I think initially the competition is Nick Chubb versus health. How does he look? Does the foot look good? Does the knee look good? And if he looks good, if he looks healthy, we know Mixon will be on the team. We know Chubb will be on the team. I think Woody Marks is going to be on this team because they traded a pick to get him, and he's got a specific skill set. I think health for all, if everybody's healthy, I think this is a I'm with you. Pierce versus Ogunbowale situation.
Honestly, for Pierce to make the team, it's in competition to just make the roster with all those other guys. But then I think there is a competition for second string running back.
For sure.
And yes, I know it's Nick Chubb. I get it. But he's also coming off of a broken foot from last year and a devastating knee injury 2 years ago. So who do they feel most comfortable getting a bunch of carries if Joe Mixon gets injured in the first snap of the first game?
Yep. All right, last one.
Number seven, I cannot stress this strongly enough. No, this is not an Amon Green situation. I understand the hesitancy when you saw Amon Green in 2007 come in and just was never the same version of what he was in Green Bay. This is the difference. They signed Amon Green to be the bell cow. Yeah. They gave Amon Green a 3-year lucrative by 2007 standards.
Well, I'm looking at the article. 4 years, $23 million.
Yeah, which back then was a lot of money for a running back.
Yes.
It doesn't even remotely approach the Amon Green situation.
I agree.
Amon Green, you were depending on Amon Green. Right now, Nick Chubb is a potential bonus. It very, very, very low risk.
He's a scratch off.
They're not looking at him as a guy who's going to displace Joe Mixon. So just as a way of shutting that down, there are very, very few similarities to the Amon Green situation and the Nick Chubb situation.
I saw someone mention Ed Reed, too, that situation with Ed Reed. And again,
yeah, Ed Reed, they thought Ed Reed was going to come in and teach guys how to be a champion.
Yeah.
You know, that was, and then he ended up not being a big fit, a good fit. He was going to be a day one starter, obviously, all of that. It's the similarities are that, yes, they're aging players that are on the back nine of their career, but it's just, it's not the same in terms of what the team is expecting of them.
Expecting,
or paying for.
Paying for and expecting, and the risk factor. This is a, this is an extremely, extremely low risk factor compared to, not that the Ed Reed and Amon Green contracts were like going to ruin your salary cap for years, but we're comparing it to Nick Chubb. We're not comparing it to the high end of the salary cap. So yeah. Agreed with all that. That was good, man. Seven reasons. So you love the Nick Chubb signing. That's good.
Yeah. People, right after I told you that, you know, whenever you present a list, it should be in groups of three, you teased that, hey, we'll have seven reasons coming up.
You just said you said three, but you also said odd numbers.
Odd numbers, yeah.
So you're good.
I sent you a little blurb about why odd number, why people like odd numbers. Yeah.
Good. A few people weighing in on the whole Cleveland-Houston dynamic. Don't forget that they also traded Brock Osweiler to Cleveland. That was, I would say Cleveland probably won that deal. They got the second round pick that they used to draft Nick Chubb in that trade.
Right. And Cleveland never expected. Remember, that was an NBA style salary dump.
Yep.
And I'm still kind of amazed that the NFL allowed it, because supposedly they don't allow that kind of stuff. Like, Cleveland had to act like they liked Brock Osweiler for that deal to not get negated.
Yes.
And he ended up being gone from the team in less than a year, less than a season.
They
basically bought a pick with that.
Yeah. No, he was on Miami a year later, because I know that, because he came here and played on Thursday Night Football against the Texans. Well, Brock's return to Miami back then. You can text the show 713-572-4610. That was good. Nick Chubb, a Houston Texan, minicamp getting started a little over 2 hours from now out at the Methodist Training Center with the Houston Texans.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.
I'm CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent Major Garrett, and you're invited to The Takeout. No reservations required. Every weeknight, our podcast serves up a balanced menu of politics, policy, and pop culture. The day's happenings with curiosity, informality, and humor. Serious discussion, but we don't take ourselves too seriously. Follow and listen to The Takeout with me, Major Garrett, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So this was interesting yesterday. We know Aaron Rodgers signed his deal with the Steelers. It's 1 year and $13 million and change, up to about $20 million if he hits incentives and whatnot. Adam Schefter reported this yesterday, that Aaron Rodgers, this will be funny to see how Aaron Rodgers takes all this, that he was actually plan C for the Pittsburgh Steelers this offseason.
This was the best move that the Pittsburgh Steelers could make right now. But let's also remember that this was the third option for the Pittsburgh Steelers. They were in on Matthew Stafford and couldn't get done a trade. They tried to re-sign Justin Fields. He opted to go to the New York Jets, where he will meet Aaron Rodgers on opening day. And after they couldn't get a trade done for Stafford and couldn't get Fields re-signed, they pivoted to Aaron Rodgers. So Aaron Rodgers right now was their third choice, their best choice right now, but their third choice, and he becomes right now the third best quarterback in the AFC North.
Okay. I think Aaron Rodgers probably read the news. Well, I don't know. Maybe
not. It's not like this would be a revelation to him or anything.
Yeah. I'm assuming the timeline is
everything that Schefter, I guess, reported. He didn't. He encapsulated the reality of the situation.
Yeah.
Which was stuff that's already been publicly reported.
Yeah.
So I don't think Aaron Rodgers, for one, I don't think he's, who knows, maybe he is. I don't think he's scrolling Pro Football Talk every single day and everything. The way he puts it, he finds out things when people tell him that stuff has been said.
He either scrolls it every day or scrolls it not at all.
I think he doesn't scroll it at all. Yeah. And that's why sometimes he gets, Sometimes he goes after the wrong people sometimes in the media because somebody will tell him that somebody said something and you're like, wait, no, Aaron, that's not what they said. But Aaron Rodgers theoretically probably knows all of that. He knows that Aaron Rodgers might have a huge ego, as you want your NFL quarterbacks to have, but he also understands the reality of the Steelers have been looking for a quarterback and this is just the way that it worked out.
Yep. I'm anxious. I kind of wish the Steelers were on the Texans' schedule this year. One, to get back at Aaron Rodgers for last year, but two, just because I'm totally intrigued by this Aaron Rodgers thing.
I don't want them, because if there's one thing you can say about all the great things that the Texans' defense has done in the last couple years with DeMeco Ryans, the one curious thing is they allow various nondescript quarterbacks that have the best game of their season.
Fair.
Aaron Rodgers last year, Zach Wilson the before, Desmond Ritter with the Falcon, all over the place.
Oh yeah.
So no, I want to face as few nondescript, non-divisional quarterbacks as possible.
That's fair. So Eric Edholm had a piece on NFL.com. 12 teams, there's 12 teams in the NFL that have never won a Super Bowl. The Texans are one of those teams. And he ranks them based on the likelihood, or his prediction as to the likelihood as to, them winning a Super Bowl, each of these 12 teams, ranks them on likelihood. And the Texans are fifth on this list. Why should the Texans be behind, or what? The Texans are fifth. There's four teams ahead of them. The four teams that are ahead of them, then I'll pose the question, are Buffalo number one. I don't think there's a ton of argument with that. Detroit number two. Minnesota number three, and Cincinnati number four. Are you disrespected, Seth? Do you feel disrespected as a Houston Texans fan about being behind any of those four teams in terms of the team's likelihood of winning a Super Bowl this year?
I want hell to be disrespected by Minnesota being above them, since J.J. McCarthy, for all intents and purposes, a rookie is gonna be starting for them this year, and yet. The Texans faced Minnesota last year with a quarterback that nobody thought much of before 2024
and
Sam Darnold. People thought a lot more highly of J.J. McCarthy going into 2024 than they thought of Sam Darnold. The Sam Darnold and that Minnesota Vikings team just completely and thoroughly dismantled the Texans. So I can't be offended by that.
Okay.
I can't.
Okay. What about Cincinnati at four?
It's Joe Burrow. I think Joe Burrow and that offense in general, and then some hope that if you look at just how drastically bad the Bengals defense underperformed last year, it makes sense. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Are you offended?
By the Minnesota one, I am a little bit. Just that's a lot of equity you're putting in J.J. McCarthy. Sam Darnold at least had been around. J.J. McCarthy, the speed of the game is about to speed up big time for J.J. McCarthy. So that one I'm a little offended by. Look, if you threw me in a court of law and I had to argue Minnesota versus the Texans, it would be a battle for sure. Cincinnati just doesn't have a defense. I just don't know that they're going to be I don't know that they're going to win enough games to put themselves in position to win a Super Bowl. That's a bad defense. And they haven't re-signed, Trey Hendrickson.
Yeah, what is going on with Hendrickson? Has it been radio silence? We haven't checked. Nothing headline grabbing.
Nothing, and he's threatening to sit out. He's saying he'll sit out the year if he has to, which is the dumbest thing you can do. He's set to make like $15, $17 million. If you sit out the year, your contract just tolls for another year and you're a Bengal again next year.
This is where I would look at, if you're looking at it as objectively as possible from outside of either of those two cities, you look at the Bengals and you say, hey, offense is doing everything they need to do. The defense sucks. If you're looking at it objectively from outside Houston, you look at the Texans and you say, well, defense is doing everything you expect them to do. The offense was bad last year.
Yeah.
And you got offense trumps defense in any given year in the NFL. So that's where on the very 35,000 foot view of things, it makes sense.
The funny thing is about this list is that the two teams that are at the very top, Buffalo and Detroit, who you and I haven't even mentioned here in terms of comparing them to the Texans. Granted, both the games were at home, but they beat Buffalo and probably should have beaten Detroit, both of those teams last year. Again, both games at home, so that's that matters. And yet, I feel like given where the Texans were offensively last year, until I see it, I have a hard time making an argument versus either of those teams.
Well, the cool thing about this is if you look at those five teams, including the Texans, there's, I think compared to previous years where maybe we were optimistic prematurely or what have you, there's no reason to think that the Texans aren't in that same group, like that can't battle it out with any of those four teams that are above them.
For sure.
And as evidenced by the way they played them on the field last year.
Yeah.
And you know, the Vikings, obviously. The Vikings is an interesting one because Brian Flores' defense was really humming, and the Texans' offense was not ready to pass that test. Mm-hmm. They just flat out weren't. Brian Flores, the defense coordinator of the Vikings, did everything that would dismantle a bad offensive line, a young quarterback, all of those things. It just snowballed throughout the game. Not to mention, that was the game in which the offensive line had, was it four straight or five straight?
It was several consecutive pre-snap penalties.
They knocked themselves out of field goal range with pre-snap penalties.
It was three because they went from third and four to third and 19. So that's that. It's and they had several more during that game.
I think there were
too.
Consecutive there. Yeah, I'm gonna bet. I'm not saying you're wrong on this. I want to say it was four consecutive.
Was it? Yeah, maybe it was. Maybe it was. So the Texans fifth on this list. Just to round out the list, in case you're curious, these are again the 12 teams that haven't won a Super Bowl. Texans are ranked fifth on that list of their chances of winning one this year. Chargers at six. Kudos to Eric Edholm for putting the Chargers behind the Texans. Whereas all these power rankings and quarterback rankings I see have the Chargers and Justin Herbert ahead of the Texans and C.J. Stroud. Like it's
Justin Herbert, who's somehow even worse than Aaron Judge in the playoffs. Yeah,
exactly.
Come on, what the hell are we even doing
here,
man?
What are we doing? Arizona 7th, Atlanta 8th, Jacksonville 9th, Carolina is 10th, the Tennessee Titans are 11th. As long as we have the theme of picking on the Cleveland Browns, they are the last team on this list at 12th. So there you go. It's interesting because one of the things that Edholm brings up in this piece, Seth, is D'Amico Ryan's inability as head coach here to beat good teams. And I don't know if it was like, I don't know if it's an inability to beat all the good teams. They've had some good wins. It's an inability. It's for sure an inability to compete with the Ravens and an inability to seal the deal against the Chiefs in games that you were competitive in for three quarters. Like the Ravens and the Chiefs, who, if we're being honest, other than the Bills, those are the two teams you need to get through to get to a Super Bowl. D'Amico's had real trouble with those two teams, especially the Baltimore Ravens.
Right. Yeah. And if you look at the Ravens, the frustrating thing about that is that they cannot, the defense in that last regular season game especially just could not compete against them. Yeah. It's one thing if the offense can't compete against the defense or what have you. You expect that last year. But, man, every single flaw and blemish and potential bad outcome on that Christmas Day game, you just flat out saw it. That was the biggest letdown in all of that, I think, is how thoroughly and you look at it and you wonder again with the Ravens, man, I still fear the Ravens more than the Chiefs.
Absolutely,
because it's a physical punishing. What are you going to do to stop Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry when both those guys are healthy? The Ravens didn't have a good offensive line, but they played well because they had that two-headed monster in the backfield. It makes it a lot easier to be a good offensive line.
Yeah, the Ravens, I will say this, I feel the same way about the Ravens now that I felt during the season last year, which is, the Ravens were the three seed in the AFC, but their best game is the most fearsome game out of any of those teams. The Ravens, Ravens' A game is the best. At their A game, they're better than anybody else.
You go into the fourth quarter of the Chiefs game, and there was still a chance.
Yes.
I mean, that was a close game.
Yep.
And the Ravens, it didn't quite feel like that.
No.
Never has.
I'm looking at, like, D'Amico's 2-year body of work. Yeah, like that's if we're looking at the pros and cons, like the cons are absolutely that the Ravens have been your daddy. And that you've been in games against the Chiefs, but largely because of bad offensive line play, you did yourself in. And then, the tank injury in that regular season game was a thing, no doubt about that. But for a 2-year body of work, for a guy who took over a team that had won 11 games the previous three seasons, I don't look at D'Amico Ryans through a lens where it's like I don't trust him in big games or anything like that. Like this is a franchise that they got turned around way faster than people thought. Mm-hmm. He's been in the playoffs twice now. He's very much protected their home turf in the playoffs. They had two blowout wins against the Browns. They had two blowout wins as underdogs in those games against the Browns and the Chargers. And then, you know, he beat Buffalo last year in a regular season game. Went to Cincinnati and won with Joe Burrow healthy the year before. And with Cincinnati actually having a good defense, too, in the year before. I thought the Tampa Bay game was a good win. And he's owned the division, too, which is a big thing.
It's interesting if you look at how they match up versus the Chiefs or the Ravens, too, is that both of those teams can hurt you with their tight ends, as we've
seen.
And that the Texans linebackers not great in coverage. One of the keys to the Super Bowl for a lot of people was, okay, how's C.J. Gardner-Johnson going to do when tasked with covering Travis Kelce? Because if Travis is really good at using your aggressiveness against you, and they did a great job in that game.
They did.
Covering Mark Andrews, covering Travis Kelce, not allowing Travis Kelce to look like he's young again, all that stuff. Those are two of the huge challenges in just overcoming those hurdles.
Yep, no doubt, no doubt. Payne and Pendergast with you, 713-572-4610. People still weighing in on the running back room. Pierce won't beat out Woody Marks. Dare is a lock just because of special teams. They'll go with Woody as RB2. If Chubb doesn't pan out, Pierce's days are numbered.
Yeah, and I think that it's very fair to say that, and that's why I'm not trying to cop out of the argument. I think really it's a matter of, man, how good does Nick Chubb look and feel during training camp? Because if he looks and feels great and is anywhere close to what he used to be, that's your number two running back.
That's your two guy, man.
If he doesn't, then you got to start operating as, okay, if we can't really rely on Nick Chubb because of his health situation, what happens then? And then that's where there's room for Dameon Pierce.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of moving parts with whether or not Dameon Pierce is on the team.
The running back room yesterday became one of the most interesting rooms on the team heading into training camp. There's no doubt with the signing of Nick Chubb. Another text. What's up, guys? I missed the discussion this morning, but British Brooks looked pretty damn good last year. I figure he's going to have a say-so in the depth chart of the running back room. Probably a bigger say at the fullback position than the tailback position.
Yeah, I think his competition was with Jacob Johnson.
Yeah.
And I think that they're going to want a fullback. British Brooks' real potential upside there is in his versatility. That I think if he's a fullback on the depth chart, I think they would be comfortable if he's active on game day. If they need him at running back, he can play running back.
Yeah.
If they need him at fullback, he played tight end in that preseason game. I think they really like his versatility. So if they really want a fullback, but then also have some insurance at running back and maybe save a place on the roster instead of just having a dedicated fullback, that's where British Brooks has a real potential.
Yeah, again, he's another guy coming off injury too. I mean, he tore his ACL last year, right? That's what took him out. I know it was a knee injury of some sort that ended his season last year. So we'll see how he looks. Mandatory minicamp today, starting at 9:45. We'll keep you up to speed on everything that we see out there here. Keep it tuned to Sports Radio 610 all day long. All right, top of the hour, we will do the petty cast for Tuesday. Boy, I got some petties. I got a couple of my own, and I got a few that are very, very good from other people. The Tuesday petty cast at 8 a.m. Astros in line to make the All-Star game as of right now. June 10th, 6:10 day. ESPN laid it out yesterday. They went over the number I would have had, but I'm excited about this. We'll give you the names. Do you agree with this assessment? Coming up next.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.
I'm CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent Major Garrett, and you're invited to The Takeout. No reservations required. Every weeknight, our podcast serves up a balanced menu of politics, policy, and pop culture. The day's happenings with curiosity, informality, and humor. Serious discussion, but we don't take ourselves too seriously. Follow and listen to The Takeout with me, Major Garrett, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.